Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Hello, welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're going to talk today about small businesses, in particular, perhaps startups of a small business. Now, you know, a small business can start as a small business and get to be something bigger. But we're not going to talk too much today about the venture capital type businesses or anything like that. It's going to be what most normal people would start just as a small business. We'll use some of my own experience, and I'll share a little bit of experiences of others in doing that. You know, first of all, we're located here in the state of Georgia. Georgia was just, again, selected as the top place in the United States to form a business. And I just had misplaced my note. I think it's CNBC that did that. I know that in 2013 and 14 that they selected that. You know, there's a couple of reasons behind their selection criteria. One of them is that Georgia has a great workforce. You know, we find this true even in our company. Our company has locations in some other states. And the people that work for us up there are fabulous in those states. They're just sharp, sharp, sharp people. But we have noticed that when it comes time to recruit, we have a much easier time here in Georgia doing that than they do in some of the other states. And I just think we have here in Georgia, especially here in the Atlanta area, we have a good workforce. We also have here in the state of Georgia, we have a state government that is generally friendly to small business. Now, you know, no one wants to get a call anytime when somebody says, hey, I'm from the state government or from the city government or county government or anything else. No business person wants those calls because those are not usually good calls. And Georgia and the cities and the states can be as bureaucratic as anybody else can be at times. But in general, particularly compared to some of the northeastern states, the government down here in Georgia, our state, local, and county governments, they are they're generally friendly toward business. And that's a big deal, and it's very helpful that we do that. I'll tell you what else is down here. Most people, particularly here in the Atlanta area, there's a fairly heightened presence of an entrepreneurial type spirit down here. You run into it everywhere. You always talk to people that are starting businesses. People that start and run businesses here in the Atlanta area are generally admired. This is not a heavily unionized area or anything like that. So people have that's a bit of a career path and a dream for a lot of people down here. So for that reason, Georgia, if you're in this area, Georgia is a great place to be starting a business. I was thinking back to when we started our business a number of years ago. There was a particular morning that I remember sitting at our kitchen table, my wife and I, and we were opening envelopes that had checks in there, and those checks were in payment of some manually typed invoices that I sent out. And literally, I used a typewriter. This is a long time ago. I used a typewriter to type out invoices, and we would mail them off. And then people would come back, and my wife was sort of doing all of our bookkeeping. Vicki, and she was looking at this, and she was just sort of made the offhand comment. She said, you know, I just can't believe that these people send us money. And I said, well, they're not just sending us money. They owe us this money. We've done work for these people. And it suddenly kind of hit both of us, and we sort of just talked about it. You know, hey, we're a business. We're actually a business. We have customers. I'd always wanted to own a business most of my life. Now, earlier on, before I knew anything whatsoever about it, just sort of the dream thinking about it, I've always enjoyed reading. I'm a very active reader. And I always saw myself as opening a bookstore. I'm glad that never happened, frankly, because I'm not cut out, as it turns out, for that kind of business. But that's what I thought I could see myself doing. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, I knew next to nothing about doing that and never pursued it very much except for just having this idea in the back of my mind. I actually thought I got a little bit of training for business starting off. I was in the U.S. Coast Guard. When I was in the Coast Guard, it was under the Transportation Department. Coast Guard actually started under the Treasury Department and is now under the Department of Homeland Security. And especially when I was in, Coast Guard was a very, very, very small branch of service. We used to joke around there are more people on the New York City Police Department than there are in the entire Coast Guard. So it was a kind of a small branch of service. You knew a lot of people there. You got to do a lot of things. It was in many, and we ended up back in those days, a lot of our equipment was hand-me-down equipment from the Navy. and things of that sort. So, in some ways, it was like being part of a small business in some ways. And I did get great technical training there and things of that sort. And not only did I get technical training, I think I learned how to study there. When I'd had a pretty good high school. I did okay in high school, but generally speaking, I would only read and study in high school what interested me. If I got interested in something, I'd work at it very hard. If it was something about history that I was interested in, I would read up on it and be probably one of the more knowledgeable kids in class. But if we were reading something that I had no interest in, pretty much would just not read it. And I sort of skated by and got away with that. Well, I sort of took that attitude into the Coast Guard, and I got into a tech school in the Coast Guard up in a place called Governor's Island, which is just off the tip of Manhattan up there. And, I showed up. We'd been assigned some stuff to do out of class, and it didn't interest me very much. And I showed up without it. And I kind of learned right away that wasn't permitted. And after doing push-ups, I thought my arm was going to fall off for not having that with me. It suddenly just sort of dawned on me that, you've got to do things whether you like them or not if they're assigned. And it's I've told people this before and told my own kids this. It's kind of like a switch clicked in my mind, and all of a sudden I sort of learned how to study and learn. And that served me well the rest of my life. I went to college after that, did very well in college. I took, have taken another number of other seminars and courses in the field I'm in now, and have never had any problem learning or learning how to study. But it's kind of crazy to learn how to study by doing push-ups. I sometimes think maybe we could do that. I have some friends that are high school teachers. I suggested to them that we do that in high school, but I assume that's not permitted. But in the late 1970s, my life took an unexpected turn, and I found myself for the first time in my adult life unemployed, and unemployed with kids. I'd walked off of a sales position following a commission dispute, and Vicki and I had pretty much no prospects. They had a house payment and kids and no prospects, and I began answering every ad and looking for a job everywhere I could, and after what seemed like a long, long, interminable time, got a few nibbles, and I ended up going to work for a company out in Texas that was in the electronic motor drive business, which I knew nothing whatsoever about. And the only reason they hired me out of Alabama to do that was that Houston was in a complete boom, oil boom at that time, and you could hire no one in Houston. So they ended up recruiting me, and I moved out there to Texas to take that job with them. And, it was one of those things where everything just sort of fell into place. And I really think, looking back on it, and not to spiritualize this, but I think that the Lord sort of used that unemployment time of mine, because being unemployed, I was so desperate for a job. When I got that job out there, I poured everything I had into that job. And I was working as hard as I could for these guys, learning. I was taking home books at night and studying all about it and doing everything I could do out there. And I really think it helped make me a lot more successful than I might have been otherwise had I not been that way. So in retrospect, while that unemployment was terrible for my self-esteem and very hard on us as a family, it really worked out to my benefit once we got hired. About 3 months after getting there, having known nothing whatsoever about this business, they made me the shop manager out there, which was the first really leadership position or management type experience I'd ever had. And after about 8 months, we moved back to Alabama to open a branch for them, and then moved back out there a year later and became a national service manager, and ended up leaving there as the national marketing manager for them. So I learned all about it. I was really fascinated by the technology of what we were doing. I attended every training school I could be offered. I attended every leadership thing I could do. I read voraciously about the industry and about business, and I began doing our advertising, writing our advertisements, this was before internet days, doing a lot of direct mail, helping with a lot of direct sales, things of that sort. And really just got very interested in the business of business and learned that I was kind of fascinated by that. And particularly with a technical bent, I was fascinated by the business of business, where there's a sort of a technical part to it. And I held that position for a long time and did very well. They treated me extremely well there, and then we moved to Atlanta in 1988 to start a business with some partners. And after sort of dissolving that partnership in 1990, we formed our base company now, EMA, which, by the way, you can go look at it, emainc.net, sponsor this program. My day job, as I tell people sometimes, you're looking back, Mike, and I've always thought that my career path which is a little twisted around and not all that straight of a path, was unusual. But the more people I talk to that run successful small businesses, I find out the path to that small business was seldom a straight line. Many of them, as a matter of fact, had failed at some other things before they did it. You know, there are a lot of ways to start businesses, a lot of businesses to go into. I find myself now at my age and sort of station, a lot of people sometimes ask me advice about starting businesses, and I sometimes am comfortable giving advice if it's something I know something about. And if I don't know anything at all about what they're talking to me about, I'll pretty much tell them that because I don't want to steer them wrong on anything. You know, an observation that I've made, and many other people make this, one of the more successful ways of starting a small business is to take a skill you already have. Let's say, and let's just get out of the technical area altogether or away from electronics at least. Let's just say you're a very skilled plumber and you're working for you've learned how to do that very well, and you've worked for several companies and you're really very good at it. You've learned how to deal with customers. You've learned how to not only have you learned the technicals of, you know, good plumbing work, you do good work, you've learned how to deal with customers, you learn how to interact with people, other people you work there. You know, a person that does something like that, a plumber or an electrician or, you know, an air conditioning mechanic or you name it, that takes those skills and opens a business, that has a very, very high success rate compared to other ways of opening a business. You know, the lowest success rate is to open a business you know nothing whatsoever about. And I've run across people that do that. They will... they'll spend their entire life as a banker and they open up a restaurant. Well, you know nothing whatsoever about running a restaurant except you've eaten in a few. And then somehow they're shocked after a period of time when the business doesn't make it. When really to anybody outside looking in, you can say, well, you knew nothing whatsoever about that business. Now, some of us occasionally, we do start businesses we don't know anything about, and we just kind of wander our way through there. We, either through some good advice or just sheer luck, we get into our hard work or whatever you want to put to it, we actually begin to get there. Well, a lot of people don't. Hey, you're listening to Driven to Business. By the way, today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. Back in just a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking about some tips for starting a small business. You know, I made the point a while ago that you could have some technical skills as a plumber or an electrician or a barber, whatever, and you can take those skills and form your own business with it and be very successful with it. In fact, I made the argument a number of times, and I think even in presidential candidates here recently, somebody made the comment about being a welder. Do you know there have been a number of studies that bear this out, that if you are you're really good at what you do, and you know, you name the field, whatever it is, good welder or a good plumber, good electrician, good whatever, and you put in the time to learn those skills very well, and then you start your own business and are successful, do you know your income potential across the board is generally equal to that of like a lawyer? Or something, you know, that's where it goes. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. So they, you know, we do tell people sometimes rather than going off to school, college, and getting a degree in, I'll just use the word philosophy, is what one of their presidential candidates did. And nothing wrong with getting a degree in philosophy. I'm not knocking anybody who's doing that. But, you know, how many jobs are out there for philosophers? Well, you know, we're a country where there are a lot of the craft skills are going wanting, and there's a lot of jobs for that. I know that in our business, the people that work on electronic motor drives, the little niche business that we're in, I don't know anyone that has any skills in that that's unemployed. I mean, you can never find them. I know when we hunt for employees, it's very hard to find them. Everybody I know of in our business has the same deal. Again, it's a supply and demand kind of thing. So you can get paid well for doing things like that. But, you know, it takes more than technical skills. And sometimes I do see people fail this way. You know, when you're – let's go back to the plumber. I'm not picking on or elevating plumbers, either one. But just think about it a minute. If you're a good plumber and you go out and do good plumbing work and you know how to do that, okay, that's fine. You know how to do it. Do you have any idea why that customer called your plumbing company? Let's say you're working for somebody. Why did they call? Well, maybe your company is running advertisements and you've never even paid attention to that, but that's what's going on. What kind of, you know, who's invoicing them? There's some kind of a system there for that. Who's scheduling those calls? There's some kind of a system there for that. Who's following up to see, you know, to keep them as a customer? Who's looking for referrals? All those kinds of things that are absolutely necessary to do to run a small business. And, you know, if you're only, the only part of it you pay any attention to is going out there and, you know, installing some plumbing or whatever it is that you do. And the only thing you do is keep your eyes to the ground and only pay attention to that technical part, you're going to have a tough time in business because there's a lot more to it than that. So smart people, if you're in business, one thing you should do is learn the technical side of the business. In fact, get to be as good as you can possibly be in that, but at the same time, take a broader picture of it. Take a broader look and see how the business operates. How did you find those customers? Things of that sort. You know, one of the pieces of advice that I get into with people, I wrote a blog about this a number of years ago. It's called Don't Spend Too Much Time Picking the Furniture. And I say this pretty often. People would start a new business and tell me all about it. And I've even had a couple of guys that worked for us that would move off to some other state and start a business. And we're very happy for them about it and you know, still like them and all that. But we like them, so we're interested in them. What are you doing? How's it going? Da, da, da. And you know, they'll call me back and I'll ask them in a few weeks, okay, how's it going out there? And I'll say, well, you know, what'd you spend your time doing? And a lot of times they'll start telling me about, well, you know, I've been picking out the office furnishings and I've been getting a computer and, copier and all this other stuff that's going on these days. And, we got a real nice cell phone situation going on. I'll say, okay, fine. That's good. What are you going to do next week? Well, you know, next week I think I'm going to paint the office and we're going to. And at some point you're beginning to say, if their answer to me doesn't have something eventually to do with getting a customer, I usually try to warn them off that path. There's a book a number of years ago written by an iconic salesman called Joe Girard. The book is called The World's Greatest Salesman, Joe Girard. I'm not saying he's the world's greatest salesman. He called himself that in the book. He does have something interesting in the book. I read that book many years ago, and it's this. It's that people, even professional salespeople, will do anything other than sell if given the opportunity. They will fill out reports. They'll study maps. They will do research on demographics. They will stratify the markets. And at the end of the day, they have vast collections of information, but they have no sales. You know, Andy Stanley said once at a meeting I was in that if you have the only hot dog stand in town, your hot dogs don't have to be that good. And I would even carry that further and say, if you have the only hot dog stand in town, you probably don't need to advertise. People are going to find you. That is not the business most of us are in. Most of us, nobody's going to find us. We generally have to be proactive. Now, they'll find you perhaps through the internet or something, but you've got to be proactively in getting out there on the internet. If you think that just because you get a website and just put up a pretty website somewhere that somebody's going to find you from that, you need to wake up. That's not how the world works. There's a lot of very, very smart people spending a lot of time getting people to their websites and away from yours. So you need to thinking that up. You know, you may still be, I mean, you know, like the hot dog stand thing, maybe you are a person, you've got a product or a service that people are just going to beat your door down for. If you are that way, well, hooray for you. Most of us are not that way. And we also live in a world where communication of all sorts is never ending. People are hit with marketing messages all the time. And this is not even just outside your business. This is inside your business. I used to think you could manage employees with memos. Well, you can't. It doesn't work. And, you know, or you can manage by email or something like that. It doesn't work. Most people now have so many messages thrown at them all the time that you really have got to be innovative about that. You've got to cut through the clutter in a way. Or in electronics, we would call that getting above the signal-to-noise ratio. You know, you've got to get out of the noise and get where your message is heard. And that's a little tough sometimes. And for a small business, your survival depends on that. I mean, how much money have you got how long can you last with no income coming in? Most of us, not all that long. So you're going to have to get out there and get it done. So you need to decide at some point who your customers are or who your prospects are. Who could your customers be? How do you identify them? How do you find them? And really, that's for most of us a lot more critical than what our desk looks like. or how cool our filing system is, or what kind of computer we've got sitting on our desk. Those things may be important. If you're a computer business, that might be a really big deal. But if you're a, you know, if you're opening up a small insurance firm or something like that, your customers don't really care necessarily what sort of computer you're using or what kind of cell phone you've got. They just won't be able to get in touch with you, and you really need to figure out a way to let them know who you are. Okay, if you have no sales experience, what do you do? Well, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, you can learn to have some sales experience. You know, 90% of marketing and sales is just telling people you're here. There's a certain, you know, you can think of it this way. There's a certain group of people out there. If they just knew you were there, they'd give you a shot at doing some business. So the first thing is let them know you're there. At least do that much. Now, that by itself isn't usually enough. It could be for some people, but it's not usually. Most of the time, that's a select group of people that if they just know you're there, okay, they're not happy with who they're using right now. If they just knew you were there, you're convenient, they'll come by, they'll do business with you. Great. You can do that. For a number of other people, though, you're going to have to figure out a way to talk them into it. And, you know, if you absolutely are an introverted person that just cannot speak to people, but you're really good at doing something in business and you really have got a great business idea and a business plan, maybe you need to think about partnering up with somebody that's more of an extrovert, that really has some sales skills. Maybe that's what you should do. If you can afford it, maybe you can hire that. Or, you know, depending on your kind of business, you know, there are sales representative firms out there. You can actually hire a sales representative firm where you don't pay them unless they sell your product or service. Now, the trick to that is they've got to be able to see there's some way to make money for them out of your product or service, and that's kind of hard to do sometimes when you're a startup and trying to get that going. More to come on Driven to Business. By the way, we are streaming live. Should have said this already. We're streaming live on biz1190.com. You're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here in Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. Hey, I was going to share this early. We've been talking about the idea of spending all your time building your computer up, getting your desk going, those kind of things. I wrote a buddy of mine and I wrote a poem. I just found this on my computer. I'd forgotten all about this. We actually, I think we wrote it, the idea of putting it to bluegrass music at a business conference and making a joke out of it. I don't think we ever did. But anyway, here's what it is. It's my furniture's in place. My computer's the best. My files are all arranged. All's in order on my desk. My business is so neat. And it could be complete if I could just find one customer to sell. I need a customer. My profits aren't good, I guess. Oh, a customer, just one customer, and I know I'd be a success. That's the idea, but you cannot just sit around and have a good-looking desk and do that. You know, that being busy, even after you get it all going, being busy can be a trap. Having had a number of employees over the years, let me just tell you this. If you do have employees, and this is true for you too. This is not knocking the employees. This is true for you as well. Any job can expand to 40 hours if you let it. You can have a job that you're the whatever in a company, and if you let people do it, they will expand that job to fill 40 hours. It's not productive at all. It isn't efficient. But it's taking 40 hours. And, you know, you can go home at night sometimes after having worked all day, and you've just been busy, 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 and you think, man, I'm really doing great. But then you got to sit and take an inventory. You were busy, and the question is, busy doing what? What'd you do all day? What did you accomplish today? Well, the fact of the matter is you can spin your wheels all day long being busy, 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 and accomplish nothing. There's a couple of books about that. One of them that I read many years ago called The Tyranny of the Urgent is when, you know, things look urgent, so they take your time because they're urgent, and it's kind of a tyranny. They're urgent, but they're not important. And there are a lot of things you run into that way in business, things that are urgent but not important. Anybody starting off in a new business can certainly be forgiven for being excited about it. I certainly was. And they want their surroundings to be organized and nice, and they take pride in it, and that's understandable. It's absolutely great. You should do that. And if kept in context, it's not only is it not harmful, it's actually very good. It's very good to do that. But the problem comes up if you let yourself get fooled into thinking that that's what your business is all about. that's a more common pitfall than you might imagine. We've always had back when I was calling on outdoor plants, we used to have a little joke. We would say, you know, that the solvency of a company is usually inversely proportional to the opulence of their reception area. You know, you'd find some of these companies that, and we would find out after doing business with them, they couldn't really pay their bills. But they had these, you know, the guy had just spent, the owner of that company or the guy owning that plant or whatever had just spent wads of money out there making this beautiful work of art reception area, and they're not paying the bills. You know, you got to be careful about that. You know, even the nicest office in the world can get pretty lonely when the phone's not ringing, nobody's sending you emails, and nobody's wanting your business and service. It could be really nice and lonely. Another thing I should say is that, you know, nowadays, when I first started my business, there was a bit of a stigma about working from home. In fact, a lot of people used to, including me at one time, we would like set up post office boxes or something to kind of mask the fact that you're working from home. One thing I will say, in today's society, that's now going away. I don't think there's any stigma at all anymore into working from home. In fact, a lot of employees of very large companies spend the majority of their time working from home. So, you know, nowadays with the communications systems and computers and all that we're blessed for, you can really get away with that in a good sense. Inc. Magazine put out a bunch of tips that I had collected over the years. Just little tips for starting a small business. I thought I'd just share some of them with you because I think they're pretty handy. And I've actually talked about this one before on here, and I think this is absolutely true, is that startups don't die. They often commit suicide. And what that means by that is that sometimes they can fail because the founders just get tired of it. Even getting bored. You know, I know of a couple of situations where somebody that's had a pretty successful big-time corporate career would get out of that and decide they were going to open a bed and breakfast. It sounded like a great idea. Until a few months of running a bed and breakfast. I'm like, you know, this is boring me to tears down here running, you know, and so they end up, the business would probably be fine, except they're so bored they don't want to spend any more time on it. They just want out of it. You do find that can do it. Now, everybody gets a little tired of their business at times. I mean, everybody. I've been to a lot of like meetings and all other business owners, and I can tell you a lot of people say, you know, I just hate going to work, and the problem is it's my company. You know, but generally you got to work through that. That's usually because you've got some issues at work you're really not facing and not dealing with. You need to get that. The other thing, a tip from Inc., and I would echo this, is I would encourage other entrepreneurs to spend a lot of time boiling down what their business is and what it does. I'm always surprised. I'm in a very niche business, so we don't have any trouble really telling people what we do. Even after we tell them, they don't usually know, because we're in a very small universe that we're in, the electronic motor drive business. If you don't know what that is, and I always just tell you, then you're not a prospect. But if you do know what it is, you're a prospect. And so it's a little easy for us, perhaps, than it is for some others. But you know, I have other people will describe. I'm a reasonably intelligent guy. They will describe their business to me, and they'll talk to me 30 minutes. And when they finish talking, I have no clue what business they're in. Well, here's that should be a wake-up call to you. If you can't explain your business to somebody in a few sentences, you probably don't understand your business. I don't think that you know what business you're in. And that's a problem. It's very hard. It's hard to sell anything anyway. It's especially hard to sell a concept or a service to a new prospect who's never heard of you before or anything else. But I can promise you, if you confuse them, if they don't know what they're buying from you, or even what it is they could buy from you, you're like, what are you doing there? You're not going to sell anything. It used to always make me angry when I first began to realize that. I'd be somewhere, and you know, we've been doing business with a guy for a long time. Let's say doing field service. And back then, we did a lot of shop service as well. We'd be doing field service at a place. We did, and just did a good job. We've been doing it for years and years and years. And then I would notice they had sent a repair to somebody else. I say, hey, why didn't you send that? Because I know the guy real well. He knows, why didn't you send it to me? Oh, you do repairs? And you're like, I've been giving you brochures for 10 years here that we do. But, you know, you can't say that, of course. It's a customer. But, again, it just points out, don't ever think that your customers know everything you do or that prospects understand what you do. They don't. Communicate to them. Let them know. You know, another thing is, too, this is one of the hints off the ink thing. It's said to, and this sounds so trite as to almost be not worth saying, and it's to under-promise and over-deliver. I know you hear that all the time. Under-promise, over-deliver. Under-promise, over-deliver. But the reason you hear it all the time is because people fail at that all the time. It is so easy when you're in front of a, particularly if you're a startup and you are really going to get a business, to just agree to anything, make any promise without even thinking through how you're going to do it. Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get all that to you tomorrow when you've got another job going on and there's no way on earth you're going to get that done tomorrow. That is not how to get prospects. That's not how to turn prospects into customers. It's not how to keep customers. If you pull yourself back, pull your enthusiasm back a little bit, get realistic and say, people will much more appreciate you saying, I cannot have that to you tomorrow. I can have it to you next Tuesday and I'll do a good job on getting it to you. You might be surprised when they just say, okay, that's fine. They were just asking if you could, just be sure that you overpromise. And here's the other thing, that you underpromise. Overdeliver. I've always liked it when if you're working on somebody's car and you finish repairing that car, if you can do this, wash the car. You know what a difference that makes to a guy to get a car back that's been vacuumed out? Have you been working on a car and it's vacuumed out? I mean, he already thinks you're a good mechanic. He thinks you're doing a great job. He likes doing work with you. But boy, that little touch right there, things like that make such a difference to people. Just do the little over the top to them. In our business for a long time, we would people would send us equipment to repair. And this is coming out of industrial plants. So it's pretty nasty. And we get it repaired. But one thing we always tried to do was to make sure all the screws were back in the terminals. Even though they came to us with the screws missing, we put them back in there, clean it up really nice. So when it goes back, it looks almost like a new piece of gear to the guy. And he didn't ask you to do that. He didn't even necessarily expect you to do that. But boy, it makes a big difference in his opinion of you. When it comes back, it looks like you actually care about what you're doing and you care about him. So make sure that you can do that. Here's another thing. I think we've talked this a lot here, is have a plan for actually making money. I'm sometimes astonished when I talk to people in business and they really have no idea how they're going to make money. Like, I'm going to open up a bagel shop. Okay, how many bagels you got to sell to make a living? Oh, I don't know. Well, shouldn't you know that? I mean, how do you know if you're successful? Okay, let's say you sell 100 bagels a day and you're not making any money. Don't you want to know that? I mean, I would want to know. Okay, what's my bottom line here? What do I got to do to make money? How's this going to work? You need to have a plan for that. Figure out how you can make money. And what you may find is, we can't do that business over there because that doesn't make money. Well, then find one that does and get that going. The other thing is to educate yourself on what you're coming into. I was kind of joking earlier about the guy with the bed and breakfast. I actually know people have done things like that. Talk to people who have done that. You should visualize the business you're in and know something about it. I said earlier, the most successful small business startups are when you take something you know how to do that you're experienced in and you open your own business doing what you're experienced in doing and you know the market. Because number one, you know all about it or you know a lot about it. You shouldn't be arrogant and think you know everything about it because I promise you don't. But at least you know about it. And while it's not impossible to start a business that you don't know anything about, you can do that. People have done that and been very successful. They started up new ventures that really never existed before, and it's awesome that they can do that. But for most of us, you should just know going in that if you're going into a business you don't know anything about, you're going to have a very, very, very steep learning curve in that business. So just be prepared for that. You can make it. You may be knocking your head into the wall a number of times and crashing and burning a few times, but perseverance will pay off in that if that's what you really, really, really want to do. It's just you're going to have to learn to get in. So educate yourself on whatever it is that you're going into. Be a learner. Be a learner. Always be a learner. And the other thing is, I tell this all the time. If you're going to run a business, you need to love it. You need to love what you do because a lot of times that's what's going to keep you going when it doesn't keep anybody else going. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I hope today's been a good show for you. We're talking about startup tips, and I'm mainly dealing with small businesses because that's what I know about more than other things. We have had guests on the program, and I know some other folks that have started large public companies where they get venture capitals and so forth to get it going. That's absolutely a wonderful thing to do if you're in that kind of business. Most people don't start businesses that way. You should know that. Now, some do, but a lot don't. Most people, when they have an idea of starting a business, they have the idea of starting a small business, And small businesses can be quite lucrative. Your average small business person that is successful is in the higher end income class in this country. And so it's a great thing to do. I encourage people to that. And you know something else? You can be very entrepreneurial in a business you're in. You actually can do that. A lot of the best leaders in business and some of the best employees in a business are people that view themselves as entrepreneurial inside that business. You know, if you're running a department, if you're the service manager of a whatever, of an auto dealership or something like that, you can be very entrepreneurial inside that and have a lot of job satisfaction and make a lot of money at it and be very successful at it by being entrepreneurial and growing that part of the business. And all the things we talk about, how to grow a small business, that all applies to you. Dealing with customers, keeping them happy, going the extra mile, under-promising, over-delivering, knowing who your customers are and where they are and who they're going to talk to and all those kinds of things, all that sort of thing you can do while working for someone else and help make have a very good career for yourself, a very satisfying and rewarding career, an enjoyable job, and make a lot of money while you're at it. And so don't just think that you only do that by starting new businesses. You know, one of the things that once you do get a business going, you need to learn to look at it through your customer's eyes. And that's sometimes hard to do that. Just a few examples of what I mean by that. Information is, for some reason, there are people that think information is something you should hoard. And even inside a company, and I know some business owners that do this. Fortunately, I was trained a little differently, so I've never done this. But, you know, they hoard information to themselves. Like, somehow, it gives them more power if they're the ones that know everything. So, the problem with that is, when a customer calls in and you're not in the office, and the person answering the phone there is clueless about anything they're calling about, that does not help your customer. Your customer doesn't like that, especially in today's world. I think expectations in that area in today's world are higher than they've ever been with texting and instant messaging and being able to Google anything these days. I think people just absolutely want to share information. If you hoard information, your customers will suffer for it. However, let me tell you something. They won't suffer for it very long. You will suffer for it because they will leave you. And people aren't going to put up with that. And the other thing is that some people have what I call an obstacle course in the business. And you find this even at some reasonably successful and long-term businesses where they've just sort of let a bureaucracy grow there to where it's very, very difficult to do business with them. Some companies, you would almost think they'd spent hours thinking of ways to keep a customer from doing business with you. And we were laughing not too long ago. We were going to get something shipped, and the guy said, "Well, I can't ship that until you fill out the customer satisfaction form." I was like, why would I fill out that's just something I'm sure they put as a rule in there. Be sure you get these customer satisfaction things filled out before you ship this, but you don't tell a customer that. It's like, yeah, I'll fill one out. It's going to be terrible. You know, I'm just going to say how you're awful. Be very careful with that. And we talked a little earlier about the confusion deal. Know what business you're in. Let me ask you, if you have employees, one of the things you could do sometimes, just go around to just pick out some employees that work for you and ask them, say, okay, tell me what we do here. What's our business? Be ready to be probably a little bit disappointed. Because a lot of them will not be able to tell you. They know what their little job is. They don't know what the company does, really. Well, think about that for a minute. Maybe you're not explaining it very well. You know, you got to take the blame on yourself. Sit down, write out. And I'm not big on having all these mission statements and all that kind of stuff. I think that in my opinion, that bloom has come off that flower because it became just something that people just wrote down. But see if you can't sit down with a pencil and paper and write down in a couple of three sentences what you do. What's your business? What do you guys do? If you can't do that, you need to really have a hard look at your business. Well, okay, what the heck is it we do? Again, it's very hard to sell something if you don't know what you do, and you make sure that the people that work with you know what you do, and make sure that your customers know what you do. Try to eliminate confusion at every level of your company, and be sure that people understand the business you're in, what they can expect from you. Another thing I think people run into, and a big mistake people make in business, and you know, if you've been in business a while, you might get away with this in the beginning. This will put you out of business. I call it the failure to communicate show. And you saw the movie Cool Hand Luke years ago, where the guy comes out and says, you know what we have here's a failure to communicate. The guy kept running away. So they beat him with a stick. He got the message. When customers aren't told the whole story, they will usually make up the rest. And it will be worse than the truth. News, especially bad news, does not improve with age. You know, if you've got something, some bad news to give a customer, this is just straight. And this, I'm not saying this is easy. It is not easy. But you should just absolutely, if you want to put a discipline to yourself and your business, it'll make a big difference in your business. This is it. Deliver bad news instantly. Instantly. It is not going to get better. And also, you know, if you've got a, you know, you're going to have an uncomfortable conversation with a customer and you put it off till it's going to ruin your entire day. Just do it. It's like taking medicine. Just get it done. Do it. Put it out there. And you'll be surprised. It'll build a relationship with them. Do you know that, and this is something that seems almost counterintuitive, but you can think of your own experiences and this will work. And the research absolutely bears this out. If you have a customer with whom there's been a mix-up between you and the customer, either, you know, that you didn't perform or something went wrong in the transaction. When you have a customer like that and you take the time to successfully communicate with them and resolve that problem, and that's the big secret, where you resolve that problem, do you know that customer is more likely to remain loyal to you than one with whom you've never had a problem? Because I think inside all of us know that we're not perfect. They know you're not perfect. They know they're not perfect. And they respect somebody that owns up to what they've done and fixes it. That's a respected thing. And you think about it in your own life, that you're the same way with customers, with companies you deal with. We've used Amazon for a long time, and there was my wife especially has used them quite a bit, and there was a time where they sent us the wrong thing. We ordered it, and it just the wrong thing came. And you're up to like, and when you looked on the order though that came out, the wrong order was entered. We didn't ask for this, but it just somehow a number got in the wrong place in there or something. But anyway, the wrong thing came. So you're thinking, oh man, they're going to argue. You know what they did? They just immediately took it back and sent us the right thing along with a letter of apology instantly. And you know what that does? It makes you think, oh, it's a great company. Well, you be that great company. You be the person that people are saying that about. It'll go a long ways with you doing it. The other thing about communicating, we talked about this earlier, don't ever assume your customers know anything about your company. Never make that assumption. And I'm talking about even a customer that's been using you a long time. Never assume they know exactly what you do. I don't mean you got to be selling the heck out of them all the time, but do mention in many ways to them what it is that you do. In fact, the best routes to assume, even with an existing customer, the best routes to assume they know nothing about your company. And when you talk to them, you can say about you know a job you've done or something, and you can say, hey, you know, by the way, we also do so-and-so and so-and-so. And if they say, yeah, you know, I know y'all did that, fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with reiterating what it is that you do, so that they're going to call you and not somebody else. Because in today's world, you know, we have a saying, a lot of times business is the last one in, meaning the last sales guy was in there who's getting the order. Well, you need to. One way to get above that is make sure that you come to the forefront of their mind and that they like dealing with you. You've been listening to Driven to Business, talking about some business startups today. The next program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We'll be back again next week. See ya.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.